Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, there are two big winners in New York in the race for the White House. The U.S. Defense Secretary calls for Gulf states to focus on ISIS. A senior U.S. military official says North Korea will acquire the capability to strike its adversaries. And Iggy Azalea has a new long-anticipated album.
It's been a year in the making. She wasn't pleased with it originally, so she reworked a bunch of songs, and so now the new album's coming out.
It's right here on The Voice of America. Billionaire businessman Donald Trump and former Secretary of State and New York Senator Hillary Clinton emerged as the victors from Tuesday's New York state presidential primary election. Trump, the current frontrunner for the Republican Party nomination, extended his delegate lead and vowed to press on with his campaign.
I want to just thank everybody. I have great, great admiration and praise for the city of New York and the state of New York. I can think of nowhere that I would rather have this victory. So we love you all. Have a great evening. We celebrate. And tomorrow morning, we go back to work. I'm flying tomorrow morning to Indiana. I'm going to Pennsylvania. I will be all over. So we're going to celebrate for about 2 hours. Then early in the morning, I get up and we begin working again. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, New York. We love New York. We love New York. Thank you very much, everybody.
Trump won over 60% of the vote in New York to 15% for rival Texas Senator Ted Cruz and 25% for Ohio Governor John Kasich. Clinton met with supporters after taking nearly 58% of the Democratic vote to 42% for her lone rival Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
You proved once again there's no place like home. In this campaign, we've won in every region of the country. From the north to the south to the east to the west, but this one's personal. New Yorkers, you've always had my back. And I've always tried to have yours. Today, together, we did it again, and I am deeply, deeply grateful.
Her win makes it almost impossible for Sanders, whose campaign has been energized by enthusiastic, youthful supporters and strong fundraising, to catch up to her delegate count. Still, he vowed to remain in the race. Nearly two-thirds of New York Republican primary voters said they see Trump as the best political outsider to beat Clinton, but Democrats said by 3-1, Clinton is in the best position to defeat Trump in November. George Mason University political scientist Paul Gutman told VOA's Victor Beatty he is bewildered by how this campaign has evolved.
I've been covering campaigns for probably 36 years. I've never seen anything like this Trump phenomena. A man, in my opinion, knows nothing about the issues, says the same thing over and over again, puts down everybody in the world, and as he said, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and his people, 35%, would support him. It's ironic to say that a man worth $10 billion who's a real estate developer in New York is an outsider. He's about as inside as you can be, a real estate developer in New York. I think the amazing story is Bernie. They gave it to Hillary, but I think it's going to get a little bit closer. Bernie's got the money, so Bernie's going to stay in this thing till the end. What's incredible, here's Hillary Clinton, senator from New York, former Secretary of State, will be the first woman nominee for a major party for president, and she has like a 65% disapproval rating. So she's not like, there's some reason that a 74-year-old senator who wasn't even a Democrat until a year ago is a socialist. We figured out his policies would probably cost about $23 trillion. They're not practical. But like young people liked Reagan, young people like Bernie Sanders.
Why do the voters want outsiders this year?
People are upset. The only reason I can think of people being upset is, you know, wages aren't coming up as high as they should.
Bob, what are all these election results telling you about the voter?
We have a very confused group out there in America today. Trump has none. He shouldn't be running for dog catcher. And here he is winning the nomination for president on a grand old party. It's bizarre. You know, Trump gets the nomination. Polls show he's going to lose by 13 to 16% to Hillary.
What do you think the world is looking at with regard to the U.S. process? Are they scratching their heads wondering what's going on in the U.S.?
I think they think we're crazy. The rest of the world, I worked for the European Union for 16 years. You know, they're shaking their heads in Europe. I think the rest of the world is like, who's Donald Trump? I've done all these interviews in all these languages and all ears. Donald Trump in Arabic and Swedish and all these people that interview me. It's just people want to know who this guy is and why all these other countries, you know, people have to work through the political process. Here's a guy who's never been in politics. You know, we're celebrity driven. Doesn't matter who you are. You could be a Kardashian or Miley Cyrus. And now it's Donald Trump, and people think, well, he's a celebrity. Let's vote for him.
The next primary contests are April 26th in 5 northeastern states, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Maryland, Delaware, and Connecticut. And with a look at what's going on social media concerning the U.S. political scene is my colleague Andrew Palchewski. He's our social media reporter, and he has joined me here at the anchor desk after staying up to get the results of last night's voting. What's going on, Andrew?
Well, I didn't have to stay up very long because it was ended up being, at least on the Democratic side, a little bit of a wider margin than anticipated, certainly from some of the polls and some of the exit polls. And that was what a lot of people were talking about, Hillary supporters on social media saying, look at this great, you know, wide victory. She won by 16 points in a huge state, picked up some delegates. This race is over. She's got it. Now, Bernie Sanders supporters on the other side are alleging voting irregularities, some disenfranchisement in places like Brooklyn, New York. And they're saying he's going to keep fighting on. This was Hillary's home state, so it was expected that she would do well here. So they're not buying that this was a big win for her. They're saying that they picked up some delegates as well, and they're going to keep pressing on.
What about Trump folks?
The Trump folks, they, you know, in a word, huge, as Donald Trump says. You know, that's certainly a big victory for him. They're seeing this as just another step in the process of him eventually getting this nomination. I think Cruz supporters were a little quiet on social media because they expected him not to do as well in New York. And in fact, he finished third. But the Trump people are, you know, saying we're pressing on. This is evidence that he's doing well and he's going to keep doing well. Trump opponents saying, yeah, but this is, you know, New York. This is kind of his home turf. He's, you know, born and bred in New York. He's expected to do well there.
Meanwhile, we have something else going on today that is very interesting.
It is National Lookalike Day.
Yes, people say we look alike. No, they don't.
We're brother and sister. But people posting pictures on social media saying, do I look like this celebrity? Some of them are really uncanny. Some of them are way far off the mark. You kind of get a sense of how people view themselves through doing this. So if you go on Twitter today and look at hashtag National Lookalike Day, you'll see a whole bunch of pictures, maybe some of your friends posting pictures of who they think they look like. There was actually something I saw on Facebook this morning as well on the Maury, which is a talk show here in the U.S. They had a guest who looked a lot like Ted Cruz, but It was a woman. So people saying that this maybe is his long-lost sister or something like that.
That's
so
neat.
Fitting for National Lookalike Day.
Yes. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
European Space Agency's Venus Express orbited Earth's closest planetary neighbor for over 8 years until its mission ended in December 2014. In its final months, the spacecraft was sent deep into the Venusian atmosphere for a series of low-altitude orbits. Studying data of a previously unexplored polar atmosphere, ESA scientists found it to be pulsing with atmospheric gravity and planetary waves. The gravity waves were described as being similar to waves we see in the ocean, and planetary waves are linked with the spin of a planet as it rotates on its axis. The Venus Express data showed the polar atmosphere to have an average temperature of minus 157 degrees Celsius, which is up to 70 degrees colder than expected. And at 130 to 140 kilometers above the polar regions, the atmosphere's density was between 22 and 40% less than had been predicted. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter is calling on Gulf Cooperation Council nations to engage more in the fight against Islamic State. He was speaking today at the GCC Defense Ministerial in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and he also held a news conference. Traveling with the secretary is Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, who joins us on the line. Welcome, Carla.
Hello.
Please share with us details of the secretary's remarks.
Well, the secretary and the secretary general of the GCC were both kind of closed-lipped on their remarks because they want to save any announcements for the president, because the leaders of the GCC and President Barack Obama are going to be speaking tomorrow. The big takeaways is that Secretary Carter wants to help get the Gulf Cooperation Council more engaged in the fight against the Islamic State and even more engaged in helping the Iraqis, because the way Secretary Carter views it, the Iraqi government has to succeed and has to be able to rebuild once the Islamic State is ousted, or more turmoil is just going to continue. The Gulf nations have been hesitant. They've always been concerned about the Sunni-Shia shift, the Iranian influence that could be happening with the political realm in Iraq. And so it's very difficult to try to get them to reach out directly to that government. But that was the goal. There weren't any announcements made on that front. There was a small announcement by the GCC Secretary General. He said that they were going to, the GCC and the United States were going to continue to do joint patrols, and that these joint patrols would be focusing on Iranian arms illegally trying to get into Yemen.
Well, the U.S. might be leading by example with the recent announcement of more military contributions to fight ISIS.
Yes, it was very nice timing for the United States to give what they gave to the Iraqi government and to the Kurds. Speaking out of Baghdad on Monday, Secretary Carter announced that the United States was going to give about $450 million to the Kurds to help them just life sustainment, basically, because they're in such a bad situation right now with the drop of the price of oil that they're having problems even getting food and getting payments to the troops that are pushing back the Islamic State. And a senior defense official was telling me today that Kurds are the perfect example of the fighters that are pushing back the Islamic State, the local forces that we want to enable. So we need to enable them with this money. They've turned to the GCC and said, hello, this is what we're doing. We're leading by example. You need to do the same. That was one thing Secretary Carter did say that they were focusing on. They were focusing on the countering of Iran, of course, Islamic State. And he said the third thing that they focused on was making sure that the contributions are equaling their commitments, because it's one thing to commit to something, but it's quite another to actually make that contribution count.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us, Carla, today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, a warning about North Korea's military capabilities and Iggy Azalea's song Team is a Hit. A senior U.S. military official has warned Congress that North Korea, despite technological setbacks, is determined to perfect its intercontinental ballistic missile program and will acquire the capability to strike its adversaries. Army General Vincent Brooks, nominated to be the next commander of U.S. forces in South Korea, was asked by Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John McCain to assess the mindsets of the North's ruler, Kim Jong-un, as well as the North's ability to create mischief.
Long-range missiles, nuclear capability, and cyber activity are causes for great concern, and I think that's the direction they're going to continue to head.
How serious is their intercontinental ballistic missile threat over time?
At the present time, Senator, I think that they're struggling with getting the program up and operational, but it's very clear through the parades that they've done, what systems they have, and some of the attempted launches that they have not had success in. Over time, I believe we're going to see them acquire these capabilities if they're not stopped.
Are you worried about what apparently is the immaturity and unpredictability of the rotund ruler in Pyongyang?
Senator, in my view, we need to take his actions with a great deal of seriousness because of the direction he's going with these weapons and these capabilities that are emerging. I'm very concerned about the direction he's going, and it's evident that he's not yet deterred in his pursuit.
Noting Kim's purges and executions of senior North Korean officials, Brooks said he sees greater potential for instability. And he said China, while frustrated, is unwilling to apply pressures that could threaten the viability of North Korea's regime. The general also indicated some evidence the North is getting help from Iran, a development he called very dangerous. Despite a new round of international sanctions to deter the North's nuclear and missile programs, reports suggest Pyongyang is preparing to conduct a fifth nuclear detonation. Stephen Norper, Senior Director for Policy at the New York-based Korea Society, says the general public's remarks show a deepening concern over the North's growing capability.
North Korea has shown that it is advancing. It has done four tests now, the latest being in January in terms of a nuclear test, as well as the test of a long-range missile, which they call the satellite test, in February. Since that time, there has been a steady barrage of rhetoric. There's been proclamations by them that they have made advancements in terms of miniaturization and reentry technology. So time is not on our side. The North Koreans have been underestimated in terms of their ability to do certain things. We didn't expect them to be able to achieve what they did in terms of highly enriched uranium, yet by 2010 they'd had a very large array on display for a visiting Stanford University delegation. We have seen the attacks on Sony Pictures when people did not expect them to have a capability in cyber warfare, anything like what they were able to pull off. And now the concern is that they're on this road, that they have shown a nuclear model, that perhaps that may be deliverable at some point. And that is what led to General Brooks' very alarming words.
Is the general suggesting some sort of strike against their nuclear capabilities?
Oh, I don't think that's that overt. The Pacific Commander, Admiral Harry Harris, said in testimony earlier this year that indeed all options are on the table. And General Brooks' immediate predecessor for the command in Korea has also said the same in the same Senate testimony. So we know that they have a range of options that the U.S. military is considering. The problem with the idea of a strike to take out nuclear capability is then what is the retaliatory measure on the part of the North Koreans?
The general described the North's ruler, Kim Jong-un, as risk-tolerant, arrogant, and impulsive, more so than his father.
That seems to be the consensus, basically based on the fact that he appears to have tightened the borders. He appears to have taken a heavier hand in terms of the human rights situation, and there are somewhere between 80 and 120,000 North Koreans imprisoned in the gulag. That, though, is no way of saying that Kim Jong-il, his father, was by any means a more decent individual. Certainly, this is a regime that has been atrocious in terms of its totalitarian inclinations, from Kim Il-sung, the founder, to his son, Kim Jong-il, and now to the grandson.
Meanwhile, senior Obama administration official Danny Russell told the Reuters news agency if the North conducts a fifth nuclear test, it could trigger more sanctions, including an effort to cut off hard currency earnings estimated to total $900 million annually of North Korean workers abroad. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
It's the newest tool in the battle against diabetes, a high-tech electrochemical patch worn daily in a transparent band around the wrist to detect temperature, pH level, and glucose level from the sweat of the wearer. But it's more than that. When the patch senses the wearer needs medication, microneedles accurately deliver it from inside the patch. It was developed by Professor Kim Dae-hyung of Seoul National University.
다른 사람들 보는 앞에서 그런
Diabetics are very reluctant to measure blood sugar or get an insulin shot in public. However, this technology makes diabetes management painless.
The innovative device isn't yet available. However, Professor Kim expects it may take about 5 years to get it certified and on the market. There are well over 400 million diabetics worldwide, and the number is on the rise. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Larry London of Border Crossings has joined us here in the studio, and he always comes by and talks about music with us. And today, we're going to focus on Iggy Azalea, the female pop singer. What's going on there, Larry?
Well, thank you, Susan. Yeah, Iggy Azalea is from Australia. She has been on the music scene for several years now, although she, you know, says that she's been rapping and making music for many years. But she was discovered with her big chart hit called Fancy several years ago. She was supposed to go on tour last year. The tour ended up being canceled. She wasn't very happy with the outcome of the album. So she delayed the release of the album. Her new album is called Digital Distortion. It is due out in a few months. And she's also announced that she will be rescheduling the tour that was canceled. So she hopes to go out on the road and promote the new album, Digital Distortion. She has been in the news a lot lately because of her relationship with a Los Angeles Laker professional basketball player whose name is Nick Young, who admitted that he cheated on Iggy.
You've always got the best stories.
I've got the dirt. So she hasn't been seen with her wedding engagement ring on recently, and she was asked just this week, what's the status of your relationship? And on Monday she tweeted, we are still together, we are still a couple, we're sorting things out, and I would ask that everyone respect my privacy at this very delicate, sensitive time.
Yes, I can understand that. Well, there's one song in particular you like.
Well, I like all of Iggy Azalea's stuff. But the new song that's made it to the charts from her upcoming album is a song called Team.
My time wherever I go. I took a chance like I'm from Chicago. 100 plus in that Murcielago. About to go. Turn it to the taco.
Well, tell us a little bit about this song.
Well, it's got a lot of hip-hop and some rap. She's got a guest rapper on the song with her, and that's very typical of what Iggy does. She's guested with a number of different performers over the years. She's performed along with Ariana Grande and quite a few others. And so this new song is the first single from the upcoming album, Digital Distortion. I'm looking forward to the album. It's been a year in the making. She wasn't pleased with it originally, so she reworked a bunch of songs, and so now the new album's coming out.
Well, if she's so particular, she should be particular about her men, too, maybe.
Well, yes, but her man cheated on her. That's the story, and he admitted it on video. Now, there's a bit of a controversy as to who leaked the video. There was a story that Nicki Minaj was behind leaking that video.
She comes out all over the place.
Yeah, she's a tattletale. Well, yeah, Nicki Minaj is everywhere. But anyway, I like Iggy Azalea. Iggy Azalea was also quoted recently as saying one of the ways that she got through the stressful situation of what's been going on is horseback riding.
Huh.
And she went horseback riding with a music friend of hers who's also been going through a stressful situation, Kesha. So the two of them have kind of buddied up. And they've been horseback riding as of late. But exciting times for Iggy Azalea from Australia. Her new album's about to be released.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry. Always love for you to come on by.
Well, thank you, Susan.
Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the vicious murder of a television journalist in Turkey who worked courageously to expose the hypocrisy of the terrorist organization Daesh. The group, also known as ISIL, claimed responsibility for the attack that killed Zahir Al-Sharkat of Halab Today TV. According to Turkish press reports, the Syrian journalist was shot in the neck at close range while walking in the city of Gaziantep. Al-Sharkat, an imam who studied Islamic law at Damascus University, had received death threats from Daesh in the past. We express our heartfelt condolences to the family of Mr. Al-Sharkat, who is survived by his wife and young son, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. Al-Sharkat organized protests against the Syrian regime in his home city of Al-Bab, where he also spoke out against extremist groups Al-Nusra and Daesh. He moved in 2014 to Turkey, where his work for Halab Today TV exposed the bankrupt ideology of extremist groups like Daesh. This was Daesh's fourth attack on a Syrian journalist in Turkey. We stand ready to support Turkey as it works to bring to justice those responsible for attacks on the media, said spokesperson Kirby. Freedom of the press, including ensuring that journalists can safely report on the crisis in Syria, remains critical as reporters keep working to expose the truth about this brutal conflict and Daesh's atrocities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.